Anya had allowed the dive team to inspect the interior of the broken pieces of the ship. Paresh had joined her in the prow, while the other divers occupied themselves with the stern section. The water currents rocked the ship every now and again, reminding Anya that the site was transitory and could change again at any moment. Outside the prow, Anya and Paresh set down a heavy chest which they had retrieved from the inside. Covered as it was by concretion, they couldn't open it. The smile on Paresh's face told Anya that he was dreaming of gold and gems. Even if they had been equipped for underwater communication, she wouldn't have bothered to tell him that chests often contained clothing, textiles, or trade goods. Pirates and merchants didn't often float around the open sea carrying treasures. Treasure ships, carrying gold and silver from conquered lands, would have been heavily guarded warships, not merchant vessels. In the distance, Anya spotted the hull of another ship closing in on the Casablanca Moon. She thought it would surely hold up and stay outside the dive buoys. It didn't. Suddenly, Paresh looked frantic and pointed behind Anya. When the big, long shadow fell across her, gut-wrenching fear like she'd seldom felt electrified her. She suddenly realized how open the sea was, and how few places there were to hide if someone needed to escape a predator. Her instincts took over. She pushed the core of her body from the shadow's path just before the rough bulk of the shark slammed into her. Stunned by the attack, Anya barely stayed conscious. Her breath exploded from her lungs in a spray of bubbles that spun in the ocean and headed toward the surface immediately. The regulator floated in the water before her. She kicked her fins and shot forward. Her left hand captured the regulator and shoved it back into her mouth. She sucked in a deep breath and felt her senses spin as the tri-mix cascaded through her system. The shark stick was falling toward the sea bottom. Anya managed to grab it in her left hand, then angled her body around to track the shark. The creature was an oceanic white-tip shark. Despite the fear instilled by movies regarding the great white sharks, the oceanic white-tip shark was responsible for more attacks and fatalities against humans than any other shark. After missing Anya, the shark had become tangled in the loose folds of the net wrapped around the chest she and Paresh had taken from the ship. Suddenly it broke free, rearing towards its prey, Paresh. Anya swam in pursuit, but knew she couldn't hope to equal the shark's speed. The shark's head was small and pointed, but its cruel mouth was open enough to seize Paresh by the calf. Ink-dark blood spewed into the water. Paresh stopped trying to swim and instead reached for his wounded leg. He tried to hit the shark in the nose, but the water slowed his efforts. Beyond Paresh and the shark, Anya spotted the other divers swimming for the surface. Anya took a two-handed grip on the shark stick and pressed the end to the predator's head where she judged the brain to be. She squeezed the trigger. The shark stick jumped in her hands as the heavy 44 Magnum round exploded. The white tip relaxed in death almost instantly. Anya grabbed hold of the predator's snout and shoved the shark stick into its mouth. She leveraged the mouth open and freed Paresh's leg. There was too much blood, the divers and the sharks, for Anya to see how bad the wound was. Anya knew that the blood would attract more of the creature's brethren, and that there was little time to spare. It seemed that Paresh was well aware of the fact as well, and was already swimming for the surface. Angling up as she swam, Anya noticed that the other ship she'd seen passing between the buoys earlier had come alongside the Casablanca Moon. Tension filled the control room on the Bengal Tiger. Fleet stood in the midst of it and watched the satellite feeds showing the activity aboard Rajiv Shivaji's ship and the archaeology vessel. At the moment, there wasn't a problem. The two groups were merely talking. The Casablanca Moon's captain was obviously irate about the casual disregard the new arrival had exhibited for the diving buoy markers floating around the boat. The big man waved and gestured to the Black Swan's crew. Then two of the Black Swan's crew brandished assault rifles, and the captain backed off. Rajiv approached the confrontation, but never stepped into the field of fire. He appeared the paragon of compromise, but Fleet knew the man was anything but.
Well, Captain, if we take them down now, we can get them for weapons violations, maybe. We can hope drugs are on board. But the only way we're going to nail Shivaji for the murders I'm investigating is if he has that 357 Magnum he's been so free with.
One of the Casablanca Moon's sailors stepped forward with a pistol. Fleet didn't know why the man had done that. Maybe it was to give a better show of defense, or maybe he recognized Rajiv and guessed at the fate that lay in store for them. Either way, the sailor fired before the captain could reach him. Rajiv Shivaji staggered back. Instantly, the men with assault rifles opened fire. The bullets chopped into the sailor, drove him back against the railing, then knocked him over the side.
We're going in now. We have no choice.
We can only hope that he has that gun on him.
At first, Anya hadn't recognized the bizarre sound. She assumed that something must have gone wrong with the adductor. But when she surfaced, she saw the men with assault rifles standing on the newly arrived ship and knew that something had gone badly wrong. She reached for the new ship's stern and pulled herself up the deployed anchor chain. No one noticed her.
Where is Anya Creed?
At the top, Anya peered over the railing and saw the men standing on the deck. All of them had weapons. The man wore a Sikh's traditional turban and beard. Two of Shafiq's sailors had pulled Paresh from the water. His leg bled profusely, but it looked as if he would survive his wounds.
Give me that, you imbecile!
The leader of the pirate ship, and Anya knew that's what the ship was, seized a machine pistol from one of his men. He pointed the barrel up at the dhow's mast and tarp. The sailors and Lochata dove for cover. Angrily, the man thrust the machine pistol back into his underling's hands.
If someone does not tell me where this woman is, I'm going to set your ship on fire and kill every person aboard it.
Scared, but aware that she had no other choice to make, Anya kicked out of her fins and pulled herself onto the ship.
I'm here.
She loosened the straps on the rebreather and lowered it to the deck as the men turned to face her. The man drew a pistol from his hip.
Miss Creed.
Anya noticed with the slightest bit of satisfaction that she was taller than the man. He drew back his hand. Anya reached into the otherwear for the sword and almost pulled it to her. Even with the sword, though, she knew she'd be hard-pressed to get off the ship without getting killed. She also knew her efforts would probably get everyone else killed as well.
I am Rajiv Shivaji. The book you found. It belongs to my family.
That book has been at the bottom of the Indian Ocean for 2,500 years.
It has been lost to us for all this time. Now we have it again.
What makes it your book?
It was stolen by my son's ancestor from those who lived at Kumari Kandam and survived the sinking of the island.
They were survivors?
Yes, many of them. They built a hidden city out there in the jungles. That book will tell how we can find it. Karaksh!
Yes, father.
Go to their ship. Find the book and bring it back to me.
Yes, father!
Now! Who is captain among you?
I am.
Let my son pass and give him the book, or I will kill Miss Creed, then kill you and your crew. Do you understand me?
Yes. It's over here, boy.
Now, Miss Creed, do you still have the figurines?
No.
I don't believe you. Do you really want me to kill all those people because you lied to me?
No.
Then where are they?
In my backpack.
Bring Miss Creed's backpack as well, Garaksh.
They know better than to touch the boy. If they touch him, I will kill them all.
Master Rajiv, look! It's the Coast Guard!
Looks like the cavalry has arrived.
No, they only think they have arrived.
Garaksh returned with Anya's backpack and a duffel bag Anya figured contained the book and other things he might have gathered.
Now, down on your knees, Miss Creed.
Rajiv stepped forward, grabbing Anya by the arm and pulling her down into a kneeling position. For a moment, Anya thought about how easily she could have handled Rajiv. Putting his hand on her put him well within her grasp, but she knew that his men wouldn't hesitate to kill her, and probably everyone aboard the Casablanca Moon.
This is the Coast Guard. Put your weapons down and you won't be harmed.
Stay back! If you do not, I will shoot Miss Creed through the head. Do you understand me?
Put your weapons down!
Men, hold anchor! We're getting out of here!
Put your weapons down!
They've underestimated me, Miss Creed, and they're about to pay for that. Stay down, or you might get hurt.
Squinting against the harsh light, Anya saw three helicopters fly out of the sun. They vectored in on the ships. Barely visible against the glare were the rocket pylons jutting from beneath the wings of two of them.
Captain! Those are not our helicopters! Those are hostile aircraft! Incoming! Incoming!
The Bengal Tiger shivered beneath Fleet's feet, and he knew she was badly wounded. Flames lapped at the metal decks. The Black Swan's crew opened up their own barrage. Coast Guardsmen dropped in their tracks as the bullets took them. A few of them had been blown clear of the ship in the missile blasts. Fleet's one-eyed vision limited his ability to see his surroundings all at once. He had to keep swiveling his head to take everything in. The first order of business was to save the ship.
Accelerate! Push her forward! Push her forward! All speed!
The Bengal Tiger heeled over hard to starboard, and her engines thundered as she sped up. The two attack helicopters pursued. Fleet ran to the nearest deck gun as machine gun bullets strafed the deck around him. A Coast Guardsman went down just ahead of Fleet. Without breaking stride, trusting his prosthetic foot, Fleet vaulted the dead man and ran up the steps to the deck gun. It was a 50-caliber weapon and swiveled easily on gimbals. Operating on instinct and memory, Fleet checked the load, slipped the safety off, and took aim at the lead helicopter. Managing all of that was hard as the Coast Guard ship took evasive maneuvers.
Bloody hell!
Fleet wheeled the gun around, firing by instinct. A line of bullet holes appeared on the side of one helicopter, and he tracked them all the way up to the gas tanks. The helicopter began to spin, spewing orange flames and black smoke. Fleet swiveled to find the next target. His attention locked onto the Black Swan. A cargo helicopter hovered over the ship with a lowered rescue basket dangling from the belly of the craft. The crew was abandoning the ship. The second attack helicopter came around suddenly, seemingly turning its undivided attention to Fleet. He dove from the deck gun. Heat blistered Fleet's back as he crashed to the deck. He rolled over and unlimbered the HK-53 assault rifle. He tracked the craft with his good eye. Pieces of the plexiglass nose fell away, and the pilot broke off his attack. One of the Coast Guard cutter's other deck guns opened fire, tearing away the tail rotor. Out of control, the helicopter spun around and around, plummeting towards the sea. The rotor blades shattered on contact and turned into flying shrapnel. Fleet glanced back at the Black Swan and saw that the helicopter was just then swinging away with the rescue basket full. The body of the chopper looked crowded as well. Fleet pushed himself up and went to see what he could do for the wounded. Captain Mahendra was already performing CPR on a man.
Help me, Fleet!
Captain, did you get a chance to call your base and let them know we'd been attacked?
Their first salvo took out all communications.
Fleet glanced over at the comm area. Where the gleaming array of satellite receivers and antennae had been, only tortured metal remained. He kept focused on the compressions and willed the man to live. But Rajiv Shivaji was getting away.